Any thoughts or feelings that come up for people?
I've been coming here for 4 years, sitting with you, and that was the most clear and most beautiful guided meditation I've heard out of you, I think. Yeah, and it really hit home. Oh. I really appreciate it.
Oh, good. What part of it felt like it was helpful?
Almost all of it, but really the parts about the waterfall and letting stuff go, impermanence and all things. Mm-hmm. And then the grasping of the real samsara. Mm-hmm. That's a tough one. Come home. Come home to yourself. It's really where the real joy is.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Felt like I wanted to just speak to the most basic teaching of Buddhism, even though we don't always stick with Buddhism, but there's such an important teaching of the Four Noble Truths that I just want to touch on. And then I might just open it up for the group to have some time to discuss all of this. But this teaching was so revolutionary when the Buddha taught it. It was so completely new. And still to this day, it's like what it really is once we understand the Four Noble Truths. There's just so much freedom. And every time I read or hear the teachings, it's like it's the most basic thing, but that it really is when we come back to it over and over and over again, it makes so much sense. And it gives us so much freedom in our human journey. So the first truth, again, is the truth of suffering. That, and in Pali, it's called dukkha. And I use Pali instead of Sanskrit because dukkha has a, it's taught actually that dukkha, you shouldn't even try to translate it. But really the closest translation is suffering. But it's this idea that it's thought that it's, in my terms, dukkha is everything that goes over the waterfall. And that the only thing that is not dukkha is that remains, that doesn't go over the waterfall, which is this sense of consciousness or awareness. And that that it's this idea of, so what is dukkha? Old age, sickness, and death. Wanting something that we can't have, having something we don't want, this idea that there's something outside of us and that we're going to keep getting it. It's really usually between craving and suffering. Craving and ignorance. It's often aversion, craving, and ignorance, but it often is a sense of craving, wanting, this endless wanting. And just to remind us all that is what the definition of humans, the definition is, if you look at the six realms of the hell realm and the animal realm and the god realm and the human realm, what defines a human being is passion, is our passion. And it's, as you can feel, even when I say that, it's like, passion. God, it's what makes us so incredible. We're hot. We're hot in all these ways, like passion of all we want, passion in all we don't want, and it's like, oh, that rub and that mmm. And that journey where we go, God, I wish I didn't have that rub. Good luck. Good luck. Because this is what you've been born into. You've been born into this crazy journey, this most profound, amazing gift of being a human being, and welcome to it. Welcome to that it is going to be one crazy-ass, passionate ride. However your passion shows up. And that is what makes us unique and beautiful and interesting and creative and have the ability to evolve. If we didn't have passion, we would not be evolving. Right? And it's in that passion that brings this suffering. it often is described as that there's pain and there's suffering. So the Buddha was saying that basically there is this given that there is going to be pain of old age, sickness, and death, and everything that comes in between that. All the things that are going over the waterfall of our age, getting older, of getting sick, of dying, of losing the things we love and wanting something, getting something we want, and it's going over the edge, and it's like that constant sense that is part of the human experience, is the struggle of things going over the waterfall. Does this make sense? Okay, so in the, that we can say is like, once we really get that that is part of this journey, we don't have to struggle so bad. We don't have to go, we are so fucked up. We are not fucked up. It's actually that this is just part of, this is like, well, we signed up for this and we did what we did here. This is it. It's then, how do we relate to it? So the second noble truth is really, it's the teachings of why do we suffer on top of suffer? It's because of the trying to grab things before they go over the waterfall. And we make it worse and worse and worse because there's this idea that if only we could make that one thing not go over the waterfall, I would, for God's sakes, be happy. I'd be happy forever. And I would be an okay human being. In fact, I would be a worthy human being. And all of my neurosis from my childhood and everything would be gone. And I wouldn't have to go black and white thinking. I was either good or I was bad. Or everybody else was good or they were bad. And you can see that everything that I work with all day as a therapist with is about that. Right? It's about that. And it's that that we can look at of like the more that we recognize that for what it is, then this sense of this craving, which takes us into the third noble truth, which is basically the truth of cessation. And it was actually the definition that the Buddha taught, he taught the word cessation, just as in and of itself. The basically, it's the letting go. And that if we really understood cessation, if we could let things be as they are and stop this incredible craving, which is somewhat paradoxical because the human condition is passion, which is the rub. That's the rub. Is that it is the natural human tendency, while simultaneously we have this ability to look at the tendency, wow, what a trip is that. That's the part that makes us human. We can look at that pull and we can go, I see that pull and I can feel that pull and I don't have to react and respond to it. I don't have to do anything to it. I can just let that experience happen. And that, think about how powerful that is. That's when we wake up. Over and over and over again, as we wake up in that moment when we can go, I can experience that without being owned by that. So we can still have our passion. I mean, Trogom Trungpa was a great example in this. Man, did he live his passion. But he wasn't owned by it. Well, he was owned by it because it killed him. Oops. There's a lot of story around that, that why he actually, that there was, in some ways, he had his own death wish because he wasn't able to get this teaching across to his students. And there was a lot of stories of people who were really close to him along the way where he said that to, I cannot get through and I'd rather die than be able to than to have my students get this. But he was, that sense of being able to, because like in, I'm backing up here for a minute, in the different sects of Buddhism, the teaching of cessation has been taught to such an extreme, to the point where it's like, you know, not letting yourself experience the passion, so you really try to give up your craving. But one of the things the Buddha learned is, you know, he was trying to, have no passion. He wasn't eating. He was not giving himself any sense pleasure at all. And he realized that didn't work. That didn't save him. Didn't give him anything. In fact, it just gave him a whole lot more pain. And to actually be in this human body doing this human journey, he had to actually experience and ultimately enjoy the sense pleasures. And so, you know, my experience is that how do we learn how to fully enjoy our ability to, I mean, we can experience so much pleasure just sights and sounds and good food and touch. And, you know, there's so much to enjoy. Can we enjoy that and not be owned by it, by the thought that if we only had that a little longer, that good food or that good touch or that good lover or that good thing or those good shoes or anything, that it's that part where we let the pleasure come through and go over the waterfall. Oh, here it is. And we let it go over the waterfall. And then we rest. And then we rest, and we rest back into home. And even when here comes another beautiful sense pleasure, but we're still staying home, this enjoyment of it, we're still staying home. Here comes our partner, and here's all this wonderful feelings and horrible feelings that come along, and we still stay home, and we can experience them, really experience them. And we let them go over the waterfall. We don't have to hold on to the bad experience, because that's making me, but I can let the bad experience go over the waterfall too. So it's not just the beautiful things that we love and gain, but we can let it all go over the waterfall. So in the third in the cessation, it said there is a path. There is a path, which is what we're doing. This is the path. And he then taught that there was in the fourth noble truth, there was the eightfold noble path, which are the things that basically, in some ways, they would be the hedges of the path that keep us, well, we fall off the path, oh, we go up and get the hedge, and we come back on the path, and oh, we slip off this way, and there's a... And those, so the eightfold noble path is right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. And this might sound really uptight. Really uptight, because it's all like, oh God, we have to do it like right. And there's like a wrong if we're not right. And that's like black and white thinking. We're not supposed to do that. So it's more how I look at it as, it's everything we've been talking about. So right view and right intention are what we just did. Waterfall, impermanence, precious human birth, karma. What doesn't go over the waterfall, awareness, concentration, that is, it's like that's the right view, that we understand that we are not our thoughts and our feelings, because this is all going, this is all moving, this body is moving, old age, there's nothing to hold on to. What do we call me if it's all going over the waterfall? Right? So it's that we have the right view. If we have the right view, if we don't have the view, then we can't do anything here. There's no point in even being, we wouldn't understand any of this. We have to keep coming back to the view. Right intention is, what do we do with the view? What do we do with the view? How do we keep bringing the view back into our experience? And then right speech, action, and livelihood, those are really what I was trying to say when we were practicing is about karma, is if we actually lived from that place where we're not holding on to our beliefs and our opinions and our things we want and our territory and our personality in some way, and we're actually letting things go, that there's a way that we would be able to show up to things as they are in this moment. And if we do that, then we're not in reaction to it because it's threatening us in some way. We're actually responding to it as if we were, you know, a child seeing something for the first time. And we would respond. And if you trust yourself, because you're really staying with a view and intention, you will respond from a place of love. So right speech, right action, right livelihood have a whole teaching around them about what does that mean. You know, like livelihood is that we're not, you know, creating harm in our work. In some way, we're not creating more conflict in our work, more suffering for the people in China, or however that might affect us. Right speech is we're not causing harm in our speech, we're not lying, we're not